welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, horror. Later on, a story on suspense from 1953. But first, it's dark fantasy with the story called Spawn of the Subhuman, an NBC episode from February 27th, 1942.
Dark fantasy. Spawn of the Subhuman.
Beautiful takeoff.
Yes, good pilot. Why did you charter such a large plane for just the two of us, Michael? Isn't this being just a bit too pretentious?
Nothing but the best from now on, Adela. Besides, this was the only plane available. You can unloosen your safety belt now.
I might as well confess that the real reason I was late was because I took so much time reading the notices in the paper this morning.
Oh, weren't they superb?
Excellent. The audience was quite nice to me last night. Extremely appreciative, but I didn't expect such fine reports from the press.
Didn't I tell you before the concert that you'd be a hit? Today, my dear, you're recognized as the outstanding soprano of the nation.
You've had a lot of faith in me, haven't you, Michael?
Well, offhand, I'd say I have, yes.
You spent a lot of money to make me a success.
Don't worry. I'll collect every cent of it back if we get as good houses as we had last night.
Michael.
Yes, darling?
Do you feel, well, rather strange?
Strange? No, dear. Why?
I feel like something is going to happen.
What makes you say that?
I don't know. A feeling of impending danger just seemed to come over me all of a sudden.
Danger? What possible danger could we be in?
I don't know. But I've had this feeling before. It's like someone had spread a shroud down over this airplane.
Oh, now that's a peculiar way to talk, Adela.
It's the same sort of feeling I had that day Stefan disappeared.
Stefan Wilder?
Yes.
Adela.
I was riding in my car that day. I'd been to a matinee with several of my friends. We'd had a glorious time. I was quite happy. So I drove out into the country with the top down on my car. The wind was blowing against the car, just as it's blowing against the plane now. And the sun was glistening on the bright metal of the car, just as it's glistening on the wing out there.
Darling, please don't think of that now.
Oh, it was a lovely day. Just like today. My heart was very light. I was happy. Thrillingly happy. Stefan and I were to be married within a week.
Adela, please.
And then, for no reason at all, I had that strange feeling. It just came out of nowhere and settled down around me like a huge cloth might cover the body of someone who had just died.
Don't talk that way, darling.
It was the strangest feeling I'd ever experienced. Weird. Terrible. It gave me the feeling that 100,000 evil spirits were racing at a maddening pace behind my car, trying to catch up with me, clutch me in their bony, fiendish hands.
That was so long ago. 5 years.
So long ago. It seems like yesterday. Then, when I speeded up the car, something began to pound in my ears. It's pounding there now, Michael. It's pounding there now.
Adela, please.
The faster I drove, the more that evil shroud hung over me. I gave the car more gas. More, more, more. And then,
when they found you in the wreckage, they thought you were dead.
I couldn't make the curve. The motor had reached full speed. I could think of but one single danger. The invisible danger that raced there behind me, striving to catch me in its hold.
But there was no one, nothing.
Oh, but there seemed to be. And what was so strange, all of a sudden that bright day vanished. Just vanished. Clouds came out of nowhere and hid the sun from sight.
Darling, I better pull down the shade on the window.
Oh, Michael, wait a minute. Look. Look outside. Clouds. We're flying below them. And they've completely blotted out the sun.
The sun will be out in a minute.
Oh, it's just like that day. Clouds hiding the sun. Just like they did that day.
Oh, just a coincidence.
Dark, dreary clouds. Followed by loud bursts of thunder. Listen. Oh, Michael. What does it mean?
Nothing. Nothing at all. Just a thunderstorm. Pilot will go up and fly above it.
Why didn't he go up above the storm when he saw it?
Oh, I don't know.
Because he didn't see it, that's why.
Certainly he did.
No. No, it came up. Just like that day 5 years ago. Out of nowhere. It came up before the pilot was even aware of it.
Oh, nonsense.
It wasn't nonsense 5 years ago. First clouds, then the thunder, then it began to rain.
Well, look for yourself. It's not raining now. It's nothing but an electrical storm. See, we're going above it.
Oh, Michael, I'm frightened.
There's nothing to be frightened about. There, look. There's the sun again.
It was all so strange. That feeling. The clouds hiding behind the sun. The thunder.
Sure, but no rain.
Mr. Brown?
Oh, Michael.
Oh, darling, just the pilot talking to us over the talkback system. Push that button right there so I can answer it.
Mr. Brown, Miss Rhodes.
Yes, pilot, what is it?
Don't be alarmed about the storm. We're above it now.
Oh, yes, thank you. Just an electrical storm, isn't it?
No, sir. It's more than that. It's raining cats and dogs down there.
Michael. Rain. Oh, Michael.
We're up above the storm. Nothing can harm us here.
You remember, don't you? I never saw Stephen Wilder again after that experience I had 5 years ago.
Yes. Yes, I remember.
No one ever saw him again. He just disappeared.
Please, darling, don't think about it anymore today. You're tired. Perhaps a little rest would do you good.
Oh, yes, you're right. I am tired.
Just lie back and relax, then. Honestly, sweet, there's nothing to be worried about. We just happened to run into a storm when you thought about that old experience of yours.
I wonder, Michael. I wonder if we did just happen into the storm. Are you, darling?
Over here, dear. Did you have a good sleep?
Oh, I did sleep, after all. Why are the lights out?
Oh, I turned them out so you'd sleep as long as you could. And I'll switch them back on. There.
What time is it?
9:30.
9:30? Oh, Michael, I've been asleep more than 8 hours.
I thought you'd never wake up.
It's after dark, and you've had the lights off all this time just for me.
Well, I guess I'd better admit I got a little sleep, too.
Where are we now?
Over Mexico. Hey, hungry, dear?
Oh, I'm famished. You know, I can't imagine what made me sleep so long.
Oh, we land at Centella. We can get food there.
Have we landed at all since I retired?
No, we're circling now. Well, that's Centella down there. Oh. You better pretty up a bit. This is a secluded part of the country, but you never know who you're going to run into. Centella.
How long before we're in Monterey?
Oh, about an hour.
Did you get good reservations?
The best. Did you enjoy your dinner?
Oh, immensely. That was a nice place. Certainly a rough landing field, though.
Well, it's not actually a landing field. We had to land someplace to refuel before we got to Monterey, so I picked Centilla.
I enjoyed it. Quaint little place.
Hmm.
It's a funny thing, Michael. Did you notice the plane?
What do you mean, dear?
It didn't look a bit like it had been in a rainstorm.
I thought you'd forgotten all about that. Of course it didn't look like it. We flew above the rain before it started.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well, if you don't mind, I'm going to spend the next hour looking through my fashion magazines before we land at Monterey. Should we be over water?
Water? Well, no, of course not.
Well, we are. There's water all around us.
Well, let's see. By heaven, Adela, you're right.
The pilot's off his course.
Well, surely you must realize it.
Oh, you better go up and find out.
Yes, I will. I'll be right back.
Hurry, Michael, for heaven's sake.
Right. Door to the pilot's cabin's locked. I say, pilot. Pilot.
What's wrong, Michael?
Oh, door to this cabin is locked. Curtain over the windows pulled down inside. Pilot, open up.
Look, he's raising the curtain. Michael.
Good Lord. A thick, hairy arm.
Michael, that's not our pilot at the controls. It's a monkey.
A gorilla.
Oh, Michael, are we dreaming?
No, it's true. A live gorilla piloting our plane.
But that's impossible.
No, confound, the door's locked. Open this door. Open up.
Oh, Michael, be careful. Look at him. Peering back at us with little beady eyes. And an expression on his face that almost human.
This is fantastic. How in the world did we ever come to be in the air with a creature like that?
We had our regular pilot when we landed at Centella. I saw him climb down out of the cabin.
So did I. I never did see him again before we took off. Naturally, his back was to me when I gave him the go-ahead signal.
Oh, Michael, now what?
Oh, we're over land. He's bringing the plane down.
Oh, Michael. We're on the ground.
An absolutely perfect landing.
He's unlocking the door now. Michael. What's he going to do?
Just take it easy. Don't get excited. Whatever you do, don't run or make a fast movement. Don't let him know you're afraid of him.
Just standing there, looking at us.
Whatever you do, don't let him know you're afraid of him.
You don't have to be afraid of me.
Michael!
That creature talked.
Of course I talk.
Oh, we're a couple of fools, Adela. Just our pilot playing a trick on us, dressed up in a monkey suit.
There is no trickery. I am not your original pilot.
What?
I joined you at Centella, where I came to meet you for Dr. Luther.
Dr. Luther?
Yes. He's waiting for you. Come, follow me.
Steady, darling. Come on. We'd better follow him.
Here's the doctor now.
Well, Stephen, I see you brought our visitors.
Yes, doctor.
Yes, just as I directed you. Welcome, Adela Rhodes, and welcome to your lovely, lovely voice.
I say, look here.
And welcome to you, Mr. Brock. I'm so sorry that you will be of no assistance to me. However, you may be interested in what I have planned.
Now listen, Dr. Luther, I want to know what this is all about.
You will learn what it is all about, and without delay, I assure you. Come, Stephen, don't be so inhospitable. Show our guest into the laboratory. Sit down over there, my dear. Over here, Mr. Brock.
Michael.
Dr. Luther, I demand an explanation. Where are we? Why have you brought us here?
You're too full of questions, Mr. Brock. I've already told you I'm about to show you why I brought you here. Here, high in these mountains, secretly, I've been working for 5 years, experimenting, testing, trying to accomplish what everyone would have said was utterly impossible had I told them about it. But I didn't tell anyone. Instead, I came here and built this laboratory. You see, it's fully equipped and modern in every detail.
Now, look here, Dr. Luther.
During those 5 years, I trained Stephen here. I believe you will agree my training has been very successful. You now see an almost full-grown gorilla, behaving like a human, acting like a human, even talking like a human. I've been very kind to you, haven't I, Stephen?
Yes, Dr. Luther. Of course you have been kind.
Yes, just so. Scientist back there in your world, my dear Miss Rhodes, will tell you it's impossible to completely train a gorilla. That is the second point in which I've proved them wrong. Stephen, sing for us.
Yes, Doctor.
Me. Sipuo. Sipuo. Signore. Signore.
Doesn't he have an excellent voice?
Michael. Did you hear that?
Impossible.
Sing again, Stephen.
Oh! Oh!
You see, soon he will be world famous. I shall travel with him, take him to the four corners of the earth, and show people how well my gorilla sings.
Oh, Michael. I can't believe it. That's Stephen Wilder's voice.
It can't be.
Ah, but it is.
Yes. Now I remember. Now I know who you are, Dr. Luther. Stephen Wilder had an appointment with you that day he disappeared 5 years ago. I'd forgotten all about it, but I just now remembered.
So that's what happened to Stephen Wilder. You kidnapped him and brought him here and... You.
Precisely. I brought him here to do what others said could never be done. When I chloroformed him 5 years ago and brought him here, I thought I was ready. But my gorilla wasn't. So I had to wait. 3 months ago, I performed the operation.
Operation?
I removed the vocal cords from the man and grafted them into the gorilla.
Oh.
This is ridiculous. A thing like that can't be done.
Oh, surely you don't deny the proof I've just given you, Mr. Brock. Stephen, sing.
Oh.
You recognized that voice, Miss Rhodes, the moment you heard it. Because you'd sung operas with Mr. Wilder so much.
That was the way he sang. To exercise his voice.
Don't you both realize what I have here? The secret of an untold wealth. Why, besides knowing how to train this ferocious and morose type of animal, besides knowing how to transfer human vocal cords successfully, I have something I can exhibit to the world to prove my knowledge. Think! Think of the fortune I can amass, because people will pay immense sums to see and hear my singing gorilla.
Oh, stop it. Stop it, I say. Why have you brought me here? Surely you could have spared me this.
I will tell you why, Miss Rhodes. If you and Mr. Brock will step over here.
The only place we're going to step is out of this place.
We'll do as I ask. Stephen, these people are not to leave.
Very well, Dr. Luther.
Over here, if you please.
Better do what he says, Adela.
There. Go through this plate glass. Look into the next room.
Another gorilla.
Yes. Isn't it a fine specimen?
Fine specimen?
Yes, she.
She?
No. You're not planning.
I've trained her very carefully. She was so much more responsive than the male. Now that she's able to obey me, I'm quite ready for the rest of my plans for her.
Oh, no. No, you can't. I won't let you.
I'll say you can't.
Neither of you will be able to prevent it. Soon I'll tour the world with the most amazing exhibition on earth. A male and a female gorilla singing all the world-famous operas.
Look here, you...
Wait a minute. I just happened to think of something, Doctor.
Yes?
Do you remember the day Stephen Wilder had that appointment with you 5 years ago?
Yes, certainly I remember. I'd been planning to obtain possession of him so I could bring him here. I was most pleased when he called and asked for an appointment.
But did he tell you why he was calling upon you?
I know. No, he didn't.
He came to you, Dr. Luther, because he was losing his voice.
You must be wrong.
I am not wrong. I am the only one he told about it. It had been worrying him for a long time. You see, the more he sang, the worse his voice became. He was gradually losing it.
But that's impossible.
Do you think so, Doctor? You're a specialist on that subject. That's why he was coming to you that
day. No, you must be wrong. After all the work I've done.
Your gorilla will lose his voice, Dr. Luther. And I assure you, before you'll do anything to me, I'll see to it that my voice is ruined, too.
He won't! He can't! He's an excellent voice. Excellent! Yes, yes, of course he is. We've worked together. I've trained him. His voice can't go bad on me now. Not now. Just when it's finally successful.
Oh, you'll see, Dr. Luther.
No, you're wrong. You're mistaken. He'll sing all right. He won't lose his voice. Will you step in? No, of course not. You're in an excellent voice, Stephen. Sing. Sing your head, Stephen. Show him.
Si può, si può. Signore, signore.
There, you see? Did you hear that? A beautiful quality, beautiful tones.
Amore.
Listen, Doctor.
Stephen! What's wrong? Try again.
Oh, my...
Now you think I'm wrong.
So, it's true. Stephen, you devil. After all I've done, after all my work, this is what I get as a reward. I've sacrificed everything. My position, my career, all my money. And this is what happens. Well, there's one way, Stephen. By heaven, there's one way.
Get back, Adela.
He's got a gun.
No, no, Dr. Luther. That would have hit that beast, but look at him.
Stop! No! No, Stephen! Stephen, no, no!
You have heard Spawn of the Subhuman, tonight's original tale of dark fantasy by Scott Bishop. Ben Morris was heard as Michael Brock, Eleanor Naylor Corrin was Adela Rhodes, Garland Moss played Dr. Luther, and Muir Height was the gorilla. Next Friday night at this same time, listen to the 16th in this series of dark fantasy dramas created by Scott Bishop, The Man with the Scarlet Satchel. The story of an aged millionaire who receives a child's set of modeling clay as a practical joke, but who turns the gift into an incredible and weird instrument of destruction. Don't miss this unusual story next Friday night, The Man with the Scarlet Satchel. Tom Paxton speaking. Dark Fantasy comes to you from WKY, Oklahoma City. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Dark Fantasy, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 27th of February, 1942, on NBC. This is an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Up next, a story on suspense that was written by one of the co-creators of Paladin on Have Gun Will Travel, Sam Rolfe. He only contributed two stories to the suspense series, one called Too Hot to Live, and this next one called The Dead Alive, making its debut on CBS Radio on March 9th, 1953.
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers bring you Mr. Herbert Marshall in tonight's presentation of Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents a story based on fact and written by a master of suspense, an adaptation of the 19th century Bourne murder case called The Dead Alive. The author, Wilkie Collins. Our star, Mr. Herbert Marshall.
Hey, Wilcox, how you hitting them, kiddo?
Hello, Stan. How's our bouncing, bantam, and brainy baseball manager?
Feeling like a home run, Harlow. Purring along like a set of those Autolite spark plugs of yours.
Yeah, couldn't understand you better, Stan. Those ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs are designed for the smoothest and most economical performance money can buy.
Wouldn't use any other, Harlow. They're real major league.
Thank you, Stan. Friends, if your car isn't giving you the performance it should, why not have your spark plugs checked by your nearest Autolite spark plug dealer? He's equipped to give you expert cleaning and adjustment. And if those spark plugs are worn or need replacing, he'll install a set of famous ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs, either standard or resistor type. To quickly locate your Autolite spark plug dealer, phone Western Union by number and ask for operator 25. And remember, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite presents The Dead Alive, starring Mr. Herbert Marshall, hoping once again to keep you in suspense.
How did the doctor put it to be back there in London? Your disease, Mr. Lefranc, is overwork. Your cure is rest. Your alternative is death. Nice choice of words there, but not to be ignored. For any excitement stirred sudden, unbearable pains in my head. The trip was restful, though the prospect of visiting a country just 5 years beyond a civil war was a little disturbing. The long-standing invitation of my mother's distant relative appeared to hold a promise of friendship and hospitality. The very thing for a nerve-ridden English barrister. I boarded a railroad car at Boston, which deposited me at Morwick Station. The countryside viewed from the station was as flat, as monotonous as any that the earth can show. If to be cured meant, in my case, to be dull, then I picked the very place for the purpose.
Mr. Philip Lefranc.
Oh, yes, of course. You must be Cousin Silas.
That's right. I didn't mean to startle you.
No. I was fascinated by this very interesting countryside of yours.
Let's start off on an honest footing. This view is uninspired, Philip. But it's good farmland. That's most important. Is this your luggage?
No, just these bags. Here, I'll take the big one.
That's all right. You carry the two small bags.
Oh, but your hand, that bandage, it must be painful.
It's just a scratch. He couldn't hurt me. The carriage is this way.
Our ride to Meadowcroft Farm passed, for the most part, in silence. And silence seemed most appropriate as we drove through a grove of stunted, twisted trees. On the road ahead, a short, wiry little man walked towards the house. He glanced over his shoulder, then casually angled to let us pass. But something went wrong with our horse, for he swerved towards the man. Watch out!
Hey!
You nearly killed that man.
Next time he'll move out of the way faster.
But you led the horse directly at him.
No matter. That man was John Jago, my overseer. Not a very nice man, Philip. Not nice at all.
Then why do you keep him?
Unfortunately, Father left a controlling interest in this estate to my sister. And Letty feels that Jago can run things better than I can.
That's still no reason. You might have killed the man.
In which case, I would have given him the sort of burial I'd give my dog. Not my favorite dog, mind you.
A gray house, like a huge toad, squatted massively at the end of the road. Three barking hounds chased our carriage up to the front porch. My cousin sent them scampering as we dismounted. A melancholy, middle-aged woman without visible attraction of any sort waited for us in the hallway.
Cousin Philip, I trust the Lord sent you an easy voyage.
A delightful voyage, Cousin Letty. It's very good of you to have me.
Thank my father, rest his soul. We shall do our best to honor the invitation he extended to your branch of the family. Silas, did you pass Mr. Jago on your way up?
Yes, I passed him.
You might have been good enough to offer him a lift.
I did, after a fashion. This way, Philip. I'll show you to your room.
Supper is at 8, Cousin Philip. We start exactly on the hour.
Silas left me in a clean, almost sterile room. To pass the time, I made a game of searching for some dust. It was depressing not to find any. I paced, I worried, read, and generally tried to keep the gloom of the house from sinking into my bones. It was useless. By 8 o'clock, I was morosely trying to decide whether to go down to dinner or to repack and leave. My stomach made the decision for me. I walked out of my room and into the loveliest creature I had ever seen.
Oh!
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, my fault. I shouldn't run down hallways. Of course, you're Philip.
Of course. But they told me nothing about you.
Well, I don't think they're quite sure of how to classify me. I'm Naomi Colebrook. We'd better go downstairs. We'll miss dinner.
Are you visiting too, Miss Colebrook?
Oh, no, I've been here over 6 months now. I'm a vague sort of relative. Letty and Silas took me in after my parents passed away.
Oh, that was very good of them.
Yes, it was. But I am glad to have someone else here now.
Is anything wrong?
Well, there are tensions in this house. You may feel them.
I already have. Something most unpleasant about it all.
Oh, please don't let it drive you away. I have to talk to somebody. You see, I...
Naomi, where are you?
We're coming, Silas. We'll talk later.
Dinner started off as a quiet affair. Naomi, Silas, Letty and myself were there, of course. The fifth person was John Jago, the fellow we'd almost run down. He acknowledged the introduction to me, then lapsed into silence. The only time I saw any animation on his face was when he glanced at Naomi. Silas noticed it, too.
You find Miss Naomi's face interesting, Mr. Jago.
I beg your pardon.
Silas, please, don't start in again.
It's offensive for the help to be staring at you like that.
Your imagination is being overworked again, Silas.
Dear Letty, you're so fond of Mr. Jago. Isn't there one small pang of jealousy at his interest in Naomi?
Silas!
I'm sorry, Miss Letty. When your brother is in one of these moods, it's best that I retire. Good night.
Good riddance.
There was no need for that, Silas.
You're too even-tempered, Naomi. Let's put it to our guest here. Philip, what did you think of that surly fellow's behavior?
Why, I don't know. As to looking at Miss Naomi's face, it constantly attracts my own gaze.
Oh. Does it?
Yes. Does that make it necessary for me to leave the table?
Let's both go for a walk, Philip. I've had enough of this for one evening.
But, Naomi...
Let her be. Go, Cousin Philip. I wish to talk to my brother alone.
The danger signal in my head, those flashes of pain, did not slacken until we, Naomi and I, were deep within the grove of trees that surrounded the house. The moon was full, its rays filtering through the dense overhead growth of twisted branches. We walked slowly towards a pale green glow that diffused the gray night ahead of us.
What's wrong, Philip? Your face is...
It's party. It's pain. The doctor warned me to avoid excitement.
Silas starts up with everyone.
And he turns his anger upon poor Mr. Jago.
Yes, they had a terrible fight the other day. Mr. Jago had to use a knife to defend himself.
He won't bother me.
I'm not too sure. He was furious with you at dinner.
I refuse to allow anybody to interfere with the pleasure I take from your company. But What's causing that green mist ahead?
Oh, that's a natural lime kiln. They say it's been burning for centuries.
There's a hypnotic quality about this green pit. I can't take my eyes from it.
It terrifies me. I keep imagining what would happen if someone were to fall in there.
Oh, they should put a fence about it. What?
There, for the trees. Someone's watching us.
Huh? Who's that?
I hope I'm not intruding.
What do you want, Mr. Jago?
I don't wish to disturb you or this gentleman, but I must speak to you, Miss Naomi, in private.
This is hardly the manner to approach, eavesdropping from behind a tree.
Oh, no, sir. I've just been walking through this grove and came upon you, but I must talk to this lady.
We won't it hold until tomorrow?
It would be a great kindness on your part, a very great kindness, if you'll let me speak before I rest tonight.
Very well. We'll go back to the house.
Not the house, miss.
Why not?
There are eyes and ears in the house, and footsteps so soft that no person can hear them.
Then we'll speak here, where we can see all about us.
Sir, if you don't mind.
I don't want to leave you here, Naomi.
Oh, I'll be quite all right, Philip. Mr. Jago will see me back to the house.
You know best. Good night, then.
Good night, and thank you.
I slept but little that night. I wanted to leave. Get away from that wretched house. But the idea of leaving Naomi there all alone was unthinkable. With the dawn, I dressed and went down to the front porch. An angry sight met my eyes. Silence, holding his walking stick like a bludgeon and waving at a Jago, while the little overseer crouched before him like a snarling gamecock, the wicked blade of his knife flashing in the light.
Stay back, I warn you.
You warn me. I told you to stay away from her.
She's not my style, Mr. Silas.
You impudent beggar.
Stay back. I've set my mark on you once. I may do it a second time.
I'll crush your skull.
Stop that. Here, Silas, give me that cane.
Let me go.
I said, give it to me.
You meddling fool. He's gotten away.
Just as well. He handled that knife with some knowledge. You wouldn't have fared well in that fight.
You think not, do you, Cousin Philip? May I have my stick now?
If you must have it. Here.
Thank you. Now, I'd like to walk through the grove, unless you have some objection.
So you insist on following him?
We will finish this now, Jago and I. And this is a warning to you, Cousin Philip. Leave Naomi alone, or you may have some of the same.
Neither of them had returned to the house by late afternoon. Naomi stayed in her room all day. Cousin Letty sat in her rocking chair and knitted, her eyes never leaving the front door as she waited fearfully. The ugly premonition of violent death hung about the rooms. Finally, approaching footsteps, and we watched to see who would enter.
Silas, where is Mr. Jago?
I believe we've seen the last of that one.
Did you? You haven't brought your walking stick.
No. Don't fear, Cousin Philip. I have another. Should you want to take a stroll through the grove?
Much later that night, I sat in my room, fully dressed, trying to read. The wildest thoughts were skipping, frantically through my mind. Was my cousin Silas a murderer? He had all but admitted it. And yet, someone was walking through the hall, a light, almost stealthy footstep. I opened my door as a wide-robed, ghost-like figure descended the stairway. It was Letty, her body rigid, eyes staring blindly before her. It is dangerous to rouse a sleepwalker, so I followed. Out of the house, through the grove of trees, to the mouth of the lime kiln, she stood there, trembling in the green light. As she took one further step towards the kiln, I reached out and grabbed her shoulders. Doc, it's me. It's Philip. Letty, do you understand?
Yes, Philip. Yes. He's there. Mr. Jago is there in the kiln.
How do you know?
He called to me. His voice. He came from there.
That was a dream, Letty. You walked in your sleep.
No dream. He's in there, I tell you.
There's nothing we can do. Nobody could climb down into that pit to see.
Over there, by the tree. A long pole with a mesh iron net. You'll see. Mr. Jago is in there. He told me so.
And in the black of that night, I set about the macabre task of fishing the kill. Within the hour, I had brought up a partially burned walking stick, Jago's knife, and a small heap of charred bones.
Autolite is bringing you Mr. Herbert Marshall in Wilkie Collins' The Dead Alive. Tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
On the parlor table were lying the walking stick, the knife, and the charred bones of John Jago. I'd roused Naomi and Silas, and now the four of us sat around the room, our eyes curiously avoiding the grisly pile before us. The light from the oil lamps failed to clear shadows from the dark corners of the parlor. And so we sat and waited for the silence to accuse.
I didn't kill him.
You have murder on your soul. Mr. Jago told me that, too.
Oh, in your dream, I suppose. He never cared for you, Letty. Why do you carry on so about him?
He was too shy to tell me. And now he never will. Or you killed him.
That is your stick, Silas.
I stumbled near the kill. It fell in.
And the knife and the bone, Silas.
You killed him, Silas.
And make the most of it. I'm going to bed.
There's nothing more to be done tonight. We may as well all get some sleep.
I don't think I'll ever sleep again.
Or at least try, Naomi. Tomorrow we'll have to call in the magistrate. Aren't you coming, Letty?
Oh, I'll stay here. With Mr. Jago.
Letty, please.
No.
Leave her near me. Come.
Oh, Philip, why did it happen?
You probably know best of all.
I know nothing.
No? What did Jago say to you the other night in the garden? The police will want to know.
We've been talking. I don't recall about what. Suddenly, he seemed to go mad.
Mad? In what way?
He fell on his knees. He kissed my gun, my hand. He cried that he was in love with me.
Poor fellow. I imagine you told him it was impossible.
He wanted me to marry him. Of course it was impossible.
Silas must have found it out. That could explain the why of this murder.
Well, I can't stay here anymore.
Nor can I. Tomorrow we'll move into town until the police clear us. And then...
What then, Philip?
Oh. Good Lord, what's that?
Oh, don't leave me.
Well, it's too late to catch whoever that was.
Someone overheard us.
Yes, someone. Here, get into your room, bolt your door, and don't open it for anyone. You hear?
Philip, I'm so afraid.
Truthfully, darling, so am I. If ever a house was accursed, this was it. With madness or worse mocking from every crevice and corner. In my room, I locked the door and went to bed. Sleep did not come easily, but it came. I must have just dropped off when some inner sense warned me of a presence in the room. Something was gliding quietly towards the bed. I half opened my eyes and caught the dark shadow of movement and the momentary flash of metal. I rolled out of bed as a knife slashed into the mattress where I'd been lying. My assailant followed me, slashing, hacking at the pillow, the chair that I held before me. I tried to get out of the door. It was still bolted. And I set the bolt, and the shadow rushed, driving me back. In terror, I threw a lamp and hit someone. It was suddenly over. The knife wielder had gone. I fired a lamp, then stood, staring at the butcher knife that lay on the floor. My being revolted in fear and anger. I was sick. Sick of this house, of my cousins. Sick of waiting to be struck down in the dark. Get up, Silas.
Who's there?
Stop pretending that you're asleep.
Philip, the devil's the matter with you?
Naomi wouldn't have had you under any circumstances. What did you hope to gain by killing me?
Killing you? If I wanted to kill you, cousin, I would face up to you like a man, not strike in the dark.
Who else in this house would do a thing like that?
What of Letty?
Letty? It couldn't have been a woman.
Don't underestimate our New England women, Philip. They're strong as oxen.
You better come along with me while I question her.
You don't trust me.
Exactly. Letty was still in the parlor, staring at the bones of her dead lover, sitting stoically in her chair. Something had changed her, though. There was an ecstatic look about her, and for the moment her face was almost pretty. Letty, someone just tried to kill me.
I know.
How do you know?
Mr. Jago told me you were going to die.
She won't grasp the fact that John is dead.
Oh, yes, I know he's dead. But now he's closer to me than ever. He comes to see me and talk to me.
Did you go upstairs, Letty, to my room with a knife?
Mr. Jago told me I was pretty. I asked him if I was. And he told me. He's dead now. But he's with me all the time.
Well, Philip, are you still quite positive it was I?
Naomi! I ran up the stairs, Silas at my heels. A nagging, insane thought kept tugging at my brain. Letty, Silas, and myself, we'd been together in the parlor. Then who was it? What was it? What horror was attacking Naomi in her room? Naomi! Open this door! It's me!
Naomi!
It's Philip!
Naomi, are you all right?
Stand back. I'm going to break it open.
She's not here.
The window's been smashed.
There's nobody in the yard.
Look, over through the grove, the branches sway. Something's moving through there. That one again.
But who?
Or what? Silas, can your dogs track?
Of course, they're hunting dogs.
And bring them around and put them on the scent. Whatever that thing is, it has Naomi. The dogs picked up the scent and ran, baying into the tree grove. Silas and I, lanterns spraying yellow light through the darkness, followed. Somewhere ahead, there was something. Man or monster, without a mind. Suddenly, at the lime kiln, the dogs stopped howling. We saw Naomi, lying by the edge of the pit. I knelt beside her, feeling the life beat feebly through her pulse. And then, another feeling. The air parting behind me as something crept towards my back. Something poised to push me into the kiln. I turned sharply and a shadow flowed backwards, crossing to the opposite side of the pit. The green glow stippled around the form of a man.
John Jago.
Alive.
Yes, very much so. Though it would have been nice to have Mr. Silas hang for my murder.
Your plans for me were very much more direct.
I would kill for Miss Naomi, not just talk like Mr. Silas.
You think she'd ever look to you?
Someday, Mr. Silas, with you and your cousin dead. Oh, my, yes. Then I would return, feigning loss of memory.
It can't work out now, John. You best come along with us.
Well, take me, sirs. Come over here.
I'll be glad to.
Wait, Silas. He's too close to the pit. A slip and we'd all be in.
Try, please. I'm a match for you both.
Mr. Jago, I hear you. I'm coming, Mr. Jago.
No. Stay back, Letty. I have no use for you anymore.
You said I was pretty, Mr. Jago. You said that to me.
Letty, don't go near him.
Keep away, you stupid, ugly woman.
No. You didn't say things like that in the lime kiln. In the kiln.
Letty!
Keep back. Keep back.
Mr. Jago!
Letty.
They're both gone. Poor devils. next day, in the carriage, riding back to town, near me, beside me, the sight of her lovely face driving away ugly thoughts of the night before.
Is it all behind us now, Philip? All that hatred?
It's finished, my darling. There's just you and I and our future together.
A peaceful future. We'll have to watch your nerves.
Nerves? Oh, my Lord. In the excitement, I forgot all about it.
But the excitement might have killed you.
Killed? It cured me. That doctor was wrong. My life was too dull.
Then excitement is what you need.
Yes. I've been thinking about our honeymoon. There's a wonderful old castle on the Rhine. They say it's haunted.
Suspense, presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. Herbert Marshall.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 9th, 1953 on CBS. And so closes this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the Golden Age of Radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBellier. Thanks for listening.